Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some great guests on. In the first half, we have Dr. Gustavo Ferrer. He's the author of Graceful Exit. And in the second half, we have Irene Godofsky-Marino, and she is the author of The Colorful Kitchen. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Smoking marijuana during pregnancy has been linked to smaller weight and irritable behavior in infants, new research suggests. And if a pregnant woman smokes tobacco along with marijuana, the effects on the baby are even worse. Study author Rena Dasiden said a lot of people who are smoking cigarettes are smoking in combination with marijuana. Women who smoked both cigarettes and marijuana had significantly lower birth outcomes, particularly lower birth weight compared to those exposed to just tobacco. She is a senior research scientist at the University of Buffalo in New York. Nearly 16% of women smoke tobacco during pregnancy, according to the researchers. Up to 30% of them also use marijuana. The study was published recently in Child Development. By having patients swallow a blue dye tablet as part of colonoscopy prep, doctors can boost their chances of catching telltale signs of cancer, new research suggests. The dye is technically referred to as oral delayed-release methylene blue. When patients ingested the dye in tablet form alongside their usual pre-procedure cleansing preparation, it worked to highlight colon polyps, also known as adenomas, by upwards of 9%. Use of the dye allowed gastroenterologists to better detect and remove difficult-to-see polyps, which has great implications for further preventing this disease, said study author Dr. Alessandro Rapici. Rapici and his colleagues are scheduled to present their findings June 3rd at the annual Digestive Disease Week meeting in Washington, D.C. Obese people who carry much of their excess fat around their waist are at risk of vitamin D deficiency, new research warns. The finding highlights yet another damaging health effect of obesity. Low vitamin D levels have been linked to poor bone health, as well as increased risk for respiratory infection, autoimmune disorders, and heart disease. Study author Rakita Rafiq said the strong relationship between increasing amounts of abdominal fats and lower levels of vitamin D suggests that individuals with larger waistlines are at a greater risk of developing deficiency and should consider having their vitamin D levels checked. Her team presented their findings at a recent meeting of the European Society of Endocrinology in Barcelona, Spain. Exercising may keep you young at heart. Researchers found that people who make regular exercise a lifelong habit appear to slow the aging of their heart and blood vessels. The finding stems from a comparison of exercise histories and heart health among 102 people over age 60. Those who had exercised 2 to 3 times a week for at least a half hour a day for many years had more youthful, that is, less stiff, middle-sized arteries, the researchers found. Middle-sized arteries supply oxygen to the head and the neck. But study participants who had routinely exercised 4 to 5 times per week had more youthful large central arteries, once critical to providing blood to the chest and abdomen. The study findings are detailed in the Journal of Physiology.
Gustavo Ferrer is an MD, an experienced pulmonologist and critical care doctor trained both in Cuba and the U.S., and he has more than 20 years' experience in end-of-life management. He has received several prestigious awards, including being named as one of the best doctors in the U.S. and U.S. News and World Report, Most Compassionate Doctor, and Patient's Choice Award. He lives in South Florida. And he is with us today with his new book, Graceful Exit, How to Advocate Effectively, Take Care of Yourself, and Be Present for the Death of a Loved One. Welcome, Gustavo.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's so good to have you on. So your book has just been out a few weeks. What is the response?
The response has been excellent. We're extremely pleased. You know, people, it's a tough topic to talk about, and we present it in hidden story with great points for people to learn and to apply to their own life and the life of the loved ones. So the response has been excellent.
Mm-hmm. And how should we communicate with medical teams and get the information we need most when we come to end of life with a family member?
Excellent question. Excellent question. In the book, we have a chapter that we tackle that in details. But in general, I always felt that it was important to communicate to my patients and caregivers and family that the complexity of the healthcare system breaks down communications all the time. You know, we have teams of doctors that they're surrounded by learners. We have what we call residents, we have nurses, we have other people involved in the team that they are taking care of these patients and families, And oftentimes people do not know who is the person that will guide them, and they can have misleading information. So in my book, in the book In Grace Selected, I advise people to always try to sit with the person that is leading the team, the head doctor, and have a specific questions, open-ended questions that trying to understand, that guide them to understand what's the situation with the loved one, with the family that is in my case, I presented through the critical care unit because it's where I spent most of the time, the intensive care unit. And that's what I'm trying to tell them. You know, the complexity of the system implies that you need to know how to navigate that. So go straight to the decision maker. Never neglect the nurses. The nurses do an amazing job with our patients and family, and they oftentimes have significant weight in the information that they can tell us about our loved ones and the state that they have, and how to take care of them and take care of ourselves in that process.
Mm-hmm. Gustavo, can you give us some examples of those open-ended questions we can ask the senior doctor?
Absolutely, absolutely. The most important of those is to try and understand what's the situation. So it is important that we ask the doctors, can you explain in lay terms? I need to understand what's the overall diagnosis and where are we going with this, what is the prognosis. But before we get into the prognosis, it's basically getting a really grasp understanding of the situation. Can you please explain in lay terms? And do not feel bad. I tell patients and family this all the time. Do not feel that you are interrupting a busy doctor. Yes, we are, and yes, they are. But doctors want to be understood. And if you have any gaps of knowledge in that process, feel free to ask them, please clarify this turn to me or clarify this procedure to me and the test that we're going to be performing, what the test is going to be adding. Will that change the prognosis, the treatment, or is the test that will add just minimal value? What are the risks involved with the test? So basically, 4 or 5 points. Number one, understanding the complexity of the disease process. Number two, understanding what is the prognosis and where we're going to be going. And number three, understanding questions that guide you to understand the treatment and diagnostic tests that they're going to be performed and what is the value of each of them. Will that add something to the treatment or could be detrimental to the patient? So all these questions actually will help the doctor navigate the disease process. So in open-ended kind of helpful approach to the doctor, we can engage in a very fruitful conversation.
Is it common for families to ask spiritual questions as well about the end of life, as well as just the physical?
Unfortunately, is a topic that is really hard for everybody. And the more technology we have in the last 20 or 30 years is a topic that we don't want to talk to and nobody wants to talk about. So engaging in this kind of conversation with the healthcare providers open up to most of the time to honest conversation that will guide the family and the patients through this process. It is my experience everywhere I go and talk about the topic and talk about the book with patients and with healthcare professionals that both are hungry to understand each other, but we don't break the ice with the specific questions that would allow us to have honest conversation and understand the life has limits, and many times in medicine we end up doing things that we should not because we don't talk.
And are all these diagnostic tests really necessary if we already know it's end of life? When do we know it's okay just to let go and let it be?
It is. I also talk a lot about that in the book. It's really hard to have a general or specific, I would say, the specific opinion on specific guidelines for people. But I do know from practice, from research, that usually doctors have a good sense of the severity of the illness, the great majority of the time, and family as well. when people have end-stage terminal advanced cancer. Most people know that the life is limited. So I do advise patients and family that this is the time to start thinking about how we're going to be able to make this transition to a graceful exit, that the transition to dying, it is a process that will not destroy families, that will bring families together instead of breaking families apart. It is a process that we think about the financial implications that we seldom talk about them, and that can actually break families apart and have really bad consequences for years to come. So this is the time that neglecting those create more problems than in engaging in a fruitful conversation regarding that process.
So it's creating the ability to communicate freely with the family and with the doctor to speak.
That's right. Absolutely. It is a process that most of us do not want to engage in talking about. But, you know, the more we just recently did a workshop and I was talking to patients and families about end of life and planning. And people came to us. We actually have some videos and so on in our website. People came to us with testimonials of they'd never talk about it, and they were confronted with humongous expenses that they never thought that they could be so high. Mm-hmm. You know, burial, it is becoming very expensive today. Even cremation has become a problem and expense for many peoples and family, and for many people and families. And on the other hand, was contrasted by family that make arrangement and they thought about it. They looked into their legacy, what they want to transfer to their families and loved mm-hmm. ones. A life that is organized, a life that has no chaos when we leave this planet. And it doesn't have to be a complex organization. It's pretty, there are many places that we can go and get help and have very well organized exit from this planet. And not because we ignore that it's not going to happen. It will happen, unfortunately, yeah. It will happen. But we got to think about the people that will be impacted the mm-hmm. most mm-hmm. out of our actions. And this is the tail end of the book. We talk a lot about that.
Okay, so it's mainly like for a graceful exit to come out of denial and speak what's happening, to find out all your options. And there's more than just going to the doctors then. If we're going to find out about cremation or burial, we're going to have to start doing some investigation all around the city.
That is exactly right, and people need to take into account the values of the loved one that did not make the decision, and if they're doing that for themselves, they need to take into account their own values, the value systems and the things that they believe in order to make those decisions right and have, you know, true impact in the people around them.
Mm-hmm. Gustavo, what can we do when we're all well and nobody is terminally ill right now, just to get the paperwork done and the ideas flowing, the conversations going?
Excellent question. I think we all need to first choose somebody that will make decision for us when we're not capable, research shows, and we're involved in the research today, that most people don't think about that. And if they have somebody in mind, they have not talked to that person first, that, you know, in case I'm incapacitated, I'm not capable of making decision, I need you to be my designated one, my next of kin. I think every adult, 18 and older, should have somebody that they relied on, ideally two people, that they are not capable of making decision that will help them. That's number one. Number two, although we know it has a lot of problems, the advanced directive, but at least the living will, all the document called the five witches is something that everybody should complete, because it is a document that will guide you to those ideas. We all are expecting a long life in this planet, but we can be involved in an accident in a blink of an eye, and everything can change in a minute.
That's right. Gustavo, we're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more about your wonderful book, The Graceful Exit.